Debug is brought to you today by Hired. Go to hired.com/debugpodcast to get 5 to 15 job offers in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles, and also get a double signing bonus of $4,000 when you accept the job by using the hired.com/debugpodcast URL.
All right. So, what's crack-a-lackin'? What's crack-a-lackin'? Should I start recording now?
Yeah, I'm recording the whole stream anyway, but if you record, it's always good just in case anything goes wrong.
Pow, okay. Record.
Boom.
So how have you been, Renee? What's up with you?
I've been playing this new game. Maybe you heard of it, Revolution 60.
Yay.
It makes me feel like Frey the Vampire Slayer with a little bit of Alias and some Max from Dark Angel thrown in, but I actually get to control it and whoop the ass myself instead of just be holding it.
Yeah, nice Dark Angel reference.
Yeah. Do you get any Nikita in there too?
Because
Yeah.
Wow.
We drew from a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit of Black Widow.
Yeah. I don't know. If you know me, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of like all women in games and, you know, action movies. And I just, that is totally my passion and always has been. And I just wanted to make like, you know, the Femspendables, the movie, you know? So, yeah.
I think we should have like a sub game or like DLC that's called the Femspendables.
You think so?
Yeah. We should be using that term. I really think so.
Well, it's not lawsuit-licious is the best part. So
then Helen Mirren parody. Shows up in a helicopter with a rocket launcher at the end.
Oh my God, that would be great.
Yes.
That would be great. Just in general. Like that would be
Helen Mirren just wins everything. So
Everything.
Yeah. Oh man. No, but for real, what have you been up to? I haven't seen you since WWDC. I mean, I know you're kind of losing your mind with iOS 8 coverage and Yosemite and everything. Yeah, but what else have you been up to?
That's about it. Writing and well, you know what it is. Like, and we talked about this on other shows. It's that when you're managing, it's really weird because you're doing a lot of work. But a lot of that work is helping other people. So when you're first starting out, in my case, it's all the bylines have my name on it. You know, I used to do 10, 20 posts a day. Now I'm helping other people. So I maybe get one or two in and I'm getting good stuff done. It's just like, you know, your team is putting out a lot of code, but it's different when it's not the code you wrote personally.
Yeah. I don't know, but that's kind of the cost of leadership, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the days I personally struggle with this because sometimes my time is best spent like our professional relationship with Epic, who makes Unreal. You know, this is a good expenditure of my time to have good relations with them, but it's not actually developing code. And I'm personally sometimes really torn on that. Do you know what I mean? It feels like I'm cheating. Do you know what
There's
I mean?
There's like stuff inside you that you just want to get out. And if you don't get it out, you go a little bit crazy.
Yeah. This sounds very similar, actually.
Well, Guy does both. So he's a good bridge. Well, you're doing both. I mean, you had a fantastic article in Polygon.
Yeah. You know, that was one of the 30 most trafficked pieces on the entire internet on Wednesday.
Deservedly so.
It was, I didn't even think it was that good, to be honest. Like, I was like,
are you kidding?
Well, so you have to understand, like, I'm writing that piece and we're trying to ship the game and get it out the door. And
Your timing stinks, by the way.
Right. Timing stinks. And you know, Ben Kachera had given me like a 2-week extension already. And I'm going, oh my God, this is the first piece I've written for him. He's going to hate me. And, you know, I don't know if it's like this for you guys when you write, but sometimes you have a few false starts. And my first few like tones for it were really kind of aggressive, maybe would be the thing. And it just didn't feel right to me. And I finally sat down the day the piece was really, really due for real. Like, we weren't going to work together if I didn't hit that deadline. And I got it all out that evening. And I don't know if you guys, just to tell your listeners, it was a piece with it was basically looking at four different case studies of women in the industry for harassment they had received and just some heartbreaking, shocking stories. So, you know, I put it all together and I tried to make my tone more factual than, you know, inflammatory, which was my first impulse because this stuff is upsetting. Yeah. So, yeah, and it just exploded. You know, I got like more than 1,000 new Twitter followers over it. I got hundreds and hundreds of emails. I got more tweets than I could even read. So it was kind of bananas.
It's really hard balance because it's, if it's a subject you feel really passionate about, the danger is that if you do it in a certain way, you can let people attack elements of your argument instead of having to concede your argument.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes, and I thought you did a really good balance because you were factual. It means that you have to deal with the facts. If you get into, even like in just incendiary language, then people can attack your language. And that's a much easier vector for them.
Yeah.
That's the worst when somebody doesn't pick apart your argument, but picks apart the particular case that you've presented. Mm-hmm. It's so petty, and you can't really call them on it. And you don't, you know, they basically try to cut the legs out from under your argument, and it's just
well, you're pointless. Just a fanboy, or you're just hysterical. You're right. It's anything that they can do to personalize it and not have to deal with the facts presented.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and presenting it in the cold hard facts just makes it like upfront and something you have to deal with.
Right. Well, you know, my original background, like one of my first jobs out of college wasn't, you know, being a developer. It was being a journalist, you know, crime beat, murders, covering court cases, investigating budgets. So that kind of hard hitting factual.
Murders and budgets.
Yeah. No, I would actually drive down to the jail every single day and look at who'd been arrested and kind of cross my fingers that was someone important.
Someone's been fallen misfortune.
Yeah. It was really interesting to see who got arrested and all the stats about them. No, that's kind of my background. And I think that's when my writing is strongest. I think there are some people out there that are fighting for diversity that kind of constantly use an angry tone that personally makes me uncomfortable. But it just doesn't feel genuine to me. And I find that's when I write, it's really a tough balance to kind of strike that passion and to, you know, not write something that's just weak and ineffectual, but to just strike that right balance. Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah, I think so, totally. Yeah, very much so.
By no way to draw an analogy, but I was trying to cover all the iOS security stuff over the weekend, and my first take was incredibly technical, but then I realized that was very inaccessible to people.
Yeah.
So my second take was very, you know, you don't want to yell fire if there's no fire, but you don't want to tell people everything's okay if there's an exposed wire sparking in the corner.
Right,
and you got to try to be in the middle because neither extreme serves anybody.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, well, especially I don't want to alarm you, but
yeah. I don't find you to be an inflammatory writer generally. I find you to be very. I like what you write. I like your
stuff.
Thank
you. I appreciate it. Sometimes it comes at expense. Like same thing with your article. It took me a couple days to write that, and with iOS 7, it took me a couple days to write that. So I was nowhere near the first one to have an opinion, and that sometimes costs you attention. But mm-hmm. I think it's worth it in the end because the message itself is better.
Yeah.
You're not jumping to conclusions right out the gate in order to be the first one to say something about it.
Took one tiny little step and their conclusions were.
Since this is kind of on the topic, can I tell you guys about something I'm dealing with today that I think would be a great topic for your show, actually? So I was the keynote speaker at i360 last year in Denver, and you know, John Welker came out and, you know, invited me and actually took care of Amanda and Maria, like treated them very nicely for this conference. I don't want to like go into all the stuff they did, but he treated all of us very well because he genuinely cares about women in tech. And right now, like, I looked at Twitter this morning and he's talking to me because a bunch of people are like attacking him because they don't feel like he's doing enough or they don't like a few sentences he wrote. And it's very frustrating to talk about this stuff when I see people I respect and people I like taking like a sentence or two out of context for someone that I know cares so deeply on this issue. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I'm a little bit sensitive to that myself. And I know John, he's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
The last time I saw him at AltConf, he was wearing this incredibly dorky orange vest. And I asked him, like, why are you wearing that vest? He just looks at me and goes, it's just in case something weird happens. And because it was his job to like enforce the harassment policy at this conference. So he spent the entire conference there dedicating the entire week to just taking care of the harassment policy, that being his only job. And when people are trying to make it out like he doesn't care on this issue from a sentence or two, it upsets me. Does that make sense?
I think it's easy to jump on, the Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Or to make somebody out to be the Frankenstein where, you know, it's, like you said, completely out of context and, you know, everybody just starts the pile on.
Yeah.
I think that's actually where a lot of that male defensiveness bullshit comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're like, no, I didn't really mean that. I don't hate women because I have a girlfriend. Like that weird, right. that's most
idiotic.
Some
of my best friends are girls.
Yeah. That's kind of dumb line of argument. I think some of that comes from a little bit of situations like these where you can show that, no, John really does care and he's doing a great job. And then yet he's, you know, getting attacked.
Yeah.
But I understand it. there's so much crap and that does go on that I can see why people have a trigger finger.
Sure.
Every now and then I get something on Twitter and I'm like, yeah, I really didn't mean it that way. And I'm sorry.
Right. But I get that too. There's a purity test, you know? If you go too far,
I'm sure people get really mad at you. Yeah. Right. Well, you're lobbing hand grenades left, right, and center. So
yeah, that's me. Yeah. That's me. Yeah.
And just as a note, when you do apologize, I mean, not you guys, but just for the listeners, you don't say, I'm sorry you feel that way. You just say, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm fine. I'm sorry you screwed up. You made a mistake by feeling that way. Like, no.
Oh, my God.
Want to talk about a game?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I've worked 3 years of my life on this.
Just so happens to have one.
Yeah.
I'm more than happy to dedicate the show to whatever you want to discuss with this.
Let's talk about Rev 60. Have you guys played it?
Yep.
Well, I know you have, Renee. It was I knew coming in today it was going to be a very aggressive interview from your from your very, very critical.
I do not appreciate the amount of sleep that you cost me with that game.
Thank you for that article. That was such a joy to read.
It was
fun to write.
Oh, good.
I mean, I could talk about it for hours. I'm curious what you guys thought about it. I mean, so the game is Revolution 60. It's made with Unreal for your listeners. I mean, how would you guys describe it?
A playable for me. I used to play a ton of games. But I don't play that many anymore, mostly because I just haven't kept up with it.
Sure.
But this to me was almost like a playable movie. It was almost like choose your own adventure in a way, but it was more with attitude than it was with specific actions. Like I could just choose. I chose to be a jerk as much as I did. That was just fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to pay awful consequences for that eventually. But I don't have to feel stressed about it. I don't have to worry about whether my control or reflexes are perfect. I can just enjoy it almost as a movie that I get to make decisions about as it goes along.
That was one of our core design tenets, is we didn't think you needed to be a hardcore gamer to enjoy a story. Do you know what I mean? You shouldn't. It's like Mass Effect is a fantastic story, but you have to be very comfortable with third-person shooters and a controller with like 40 buttons on it to experience that story. And something we think about a lot at Giant Space Cat is what makes an Apple product. So, we really thought about that a lot. And we spent probably more time with people like, you know, that don't consider themselves hardcore gamers.
You can say it, inclusivity.
Yeah. We try to be very inclusive to people that, because hardcore gamers are going to pick up the mechanics, period. Mm-hmm. But we would actively bring in people that are like, well, I'm a casual gamer or I'm a lapsed gamer. And we really paid extremely close attention to them. If you've ever played Rock Band, like you guys have played Rock Band.
Yep. Right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So do you know that perfect difficulty curve where you can pick it up and put it on beginner and kind of learn to play the instrument slowly right. and then, yeah. you know, bump it up to intermediate? So the same woman that planned the difficulty curve for many of those games planned it for Revolution 60, which is why there's this beautiful difficulty curve as you're playing it. And yeah, we spent as much time worrying about that as anything else on the game because it was so important to us to be inclusive. Mm-hmm.
So you guys are all hardcore gamers. Where did that attention to newcomers come from? Did you just feel that it was a good market or did you did you have lapsed gamers amongst you?
Oh, so, that would be me.
Yeah. That would
yeah.
be, I am the lapsed and gamer.
To be honest, there's no shame in that. Like when I quit the video game business, I just quit video games. Like I stopped playing them for years. So
I think for me, you know, all my boyfriends had always been hardcore gamers. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember when I used to work at GameStop, I like had a date there every single night of the weekend for like that whole year. And I'd always dated hardcore gamers. But the guy I ended up marrying was not a gamer. And, and it's been a real learning experience to me. And I mean this with absolute respect. I love Frank, but you will hand him the controller for Super Mario, like the NES version, and watch him try to play it. And he used to struggle to get through World 1-1. Mm-hmm. And like, remember the joke article that was out with like, you know, most gamers today die 50 times on World 1-1 Super Mario Brothers. That's Frank. It really was him. And in working with him, we would kind of look at games he was good at and could really make a difference in. So like Gears of War, he really, really loves Horde mode because you're shooting monsters and he gets to be on a turret and shoot things. And we actually beat Horde mode together with two people, not a team of four people, just the two of us working in concert over like 400 hours of trying. We beat that together ourselves.
After 400 hours, I'd hope so. But yeah.
It's hard. It's hard. That game's designed for four players. But it was watching Frank up close and seeing how being married to someone that didn't understand concepts that I took for granted, does that make sense to you? And and trying to make a game that someone like Frank could enjoy. So...
And so you wanted to make Revolution 60 with that kind of player in mind?
Well, with two kind of players in mind. Make it accessible to them, but like normal and girlfriend mode is a very challenging mode. Like if you're a hardcore gamer, you're going to, you know, it will be challenging.
Just for listeners, the girlfriend mode is the extreme mode, right?
Yeah, well,
I want them to get it right. Like, I don't want to confuse them. You know?
Yeah. No, that's good. There have been controversies in the video game industry, specifically Borderlands 2, that the developers kind of introduced what they called girlfriend mode, which is this very simple mode where someone can play and can't die, and it's just unbelievably. Yeah, it's just very condescending.
So patronizing, so wrong. Call it something else. I mean, maybe mode is fun. Maybe it's cool, but no, just do not call it.
Just don't call it that. Yeah. So we call it our hardest mode, girlfriend mode.
Yeah, I like that. Inside video game industry jokes.
That's great for major features too.
Right. So how's Frank as a girlfriend? Can he make it?
I don't know. I think he's gotten partially through girlfriend mode. I actually don't know. We've all played our game so many times. Like
I can recite the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
By heart.
Yeah. And man, if people haven't worked on games and you think it's fun, holy cow, let me tell you something.
Oh, it's all fun and games until it gets iterative. And then you're like,
Like you jump into the same mission at the same point. Like, 80 times in a row trying to find a bug.
I've got to beat the boss again.
It's like that with animation too. I mean, people think working at Pixar is this amazing experience, and what they don't realize is that like one person will get about a minute of scene, and that's all they work on for the entire year. That's about the extent of it, and it's just constant.
That's why I went into illustration instead of animation in school. I had the choice, and I couldn't do it.
Really? Like, one of them done.
I love animation. I thought it was great, but I would spend, at least in the pre-courses that I took, we would spend forever for 1 second of screen time. And with illustration, it was just a picture sitting there that people could always see.
Yep.
Well, traditional animation's really crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? 30 frames a second.
For a video, 24 film, 30 video.
24 point, whatever it is. Yeah, and you've got to draw them all. It turns out that's a lot of things to draw.
And flip back and forth and light table. It's bananas.
Yeah. Yeah. With Amanda, she would show me a scene, and it was an extremely iterative process, you know. Yeah. We would and then sometimes, you know, because our game is so cinematic, it's like a movie, sometimes we would put together like a 30-minute section of the game, and we'd be like, there's no emotion in this story. And then it would be like this really hard group day, like where we would have worked as hard as we possibly could to get this 30-minute section together, which involves just more work than I think normal people understand, and would completely fall flat. And we'd all play through it. It would be the worst day. I'd feel completely demoralized. Oh, like,
what the hell are we doing? Right.
And it would just feel flat. It would feel like a B movie. And then, like, we'd all get around as a team, and we'd be like, no, we need different music here. We need to add a beat here. Like, for the ending, there's one moment where Amanda just changed this moment and got Amelia on the floor with a character, just so she was closer to her. And it was a more intimate moment between the two of them. I know that sounds very dirty, but it's, you know what I mean?
It would be she
knelt beside her. And it was a small changes, and having to iterate on it. It's really how we got the story to be as powerful as it is.
Do you have any writing background?
So my very first job out of college. Well, actually, I dropped out of college when I was 20, and had $250,000 to basically do a television pilot. And one of the ways we got that money was writing 13 episodes of a, you know, potential animated series. And so I'm 20 years old and running a starship, and like, we get a house and just totally turn the bottom floor into.
This is a recipe for disaster.
It was. It was a complete failure. Oh my God. But I
Give
learned
me some
a lot.
Money.
I learned a lot more from that than I would have if I'd stayed in college. I'll tell you that.
Sure.
So I did that. I've worked as a professional journalist like for many a time. But, you know, the script is very much me writing it and Amanda coming in and kind of adding the more human moments to it. How would you describe it, Amanda?
I think the percentage that you gave me the other day kind of nailed it. It was like 70% you, 20% me, and then 10% Carolyn coming in at the end and helping out with some things that we'd missed. But
who's Carolyn?
Yeah, like,
oh,
Carolyn is the woman we were talking about earlier who helped balance the combat system.
Oh, got it.
She also has a really strong background in creative fiction. She came in and kind of helped fill in some plot holes that were like, oh, whatever. She's like, this is actually kind of important. Like, all right, fine.
That's great. Well, you need somebody like that to come and point out.
Yeah.
You know, when you're working on something you love, there's always a weird thing that slips through the cracks and you don't see it just because
you're way too close to it. You've been staring at it for so long, and somebody new comes along with a fresh perspective and like, hey, you missed this part. Right. So she really definitely helped us out. But Bree would come up with these scenes and this really intense dialogue and pass it to me, and I'd read it over. And for the most part, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. And then just every so often, I'd be able to add in, I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan. So like, you know, my inspiration usually comes from Buffy, or and less so Angel, but more Firefly or whatever. And the little quippy things.
Good calls.
Yep.
Yeah. he's just a little popular. And yeah, so those moments I find would just come through when I had something to add.
It's the best moment of the whole game. Cause I'm a huge fan of 24, and I tried to create these intense, dramatic character conflicts. Like, this was my entire mission with it. In the original script for Rev 60, my God, it was dark. I mean, it yeah. was really hardcore. And Amanda would come in and add these more human moments to it, which are some of the best moments, the humor. And then Carolyn would basically come through and be like, yeah, this part makes no sense for the end. You've got a plot hole here. And what about this part over there? And then she came in and kind of made it so we're not going to have nerds writing us like, well, in scene X143, this is not correct. So
yada, yada, punch in the face. Right.
Yeah. 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 So I can't judge it because I'm too close to it. I mean, how did the scenes feel to you guys? Like, did it feel real? Did it feel like they were fleshed out characters? How did you perceive it?
I haven't got that far into it, but okay. Renee, I think you've played through the whole thing, right?
I played through the beta. I haven't played through the finished game. But the things, there are a couple things to me, and I don't know if these sound tangential or not, but it was the little things that made the difference to me. For example, because you have such good voice acting, I sometimes get frustrated in games where you're just clicking through screen after, or tapping through screen after screen of dialogue, because that story at the expense of gameplay. And you never had that. Your stuff was punchy but brief, which I really liked. It was succinct. And the voice acting is so good that you're enjoying it. It's not a chore for you to get through. Mm-hmm. And then you never stop. Like, some games, they're just frozen screens while you're reading this, which is not natural. Uh-huh. And you always have the characters looking around or turning or something moving or the perspective changing, which maintains visceral interest while it's going on. And all that combined together, for me at least, to make a really good pace throughout the game. So the story was good, but I never felt like I was stopping playing a game to read a story, which was really good.
When I was learning to write, it was, you know, like the Seinfeld era, the very late 90s and early 2000s. And I would really swear to God, I would download every script of Seinfeld, and I would study it, or Sports Night, and I would study the flow of it, or even James Cameron's Aliens script. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And something I noticed is they never have a character speak more than three sentences in a row unless it's really important. And more often than not, it's one sentence. And I notice a lot of writers, apologies to them, but they get so wrapped up in their own love of themselves that they don't think about the audience so much. So when I'm writing, my entire point is the audience going to like this? Is it brief? Is it punchy? Can I cut away a word here? How can I chop this down to as little there as possible, so it's punchy and it flows and it keeps the momentum going? Because
it's like, it feels like your time is being respected.
People. Yeah, yeah. Right. That really drives everything that we do. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you guys have read, you know, things from people, and they think so much about their idea and their love of their own words. And it's just, do you know what I mean? It's like paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. So
yeah.
You're watching the mechanics, not enjoying the story.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
People don't tend to talk like that.
Right.
In real life. So it's, you know, if you write with everybody giving a little essay all the time, it doesn't come across that well.
But that's game writing. That's game writing. Yeah. That's how it usually goes, you know?
But even like a Sorkin or Tarantino, they can write people talking in a page and still make it interesting. And that's, I think, what you guys... Not that you ever have anyone talking on a page, but you managed to have like the walk, the game, the equivalent of the walk and talk, or the, you know, the even from Spider-Man or Buffy, you know, when the fight's going on and they're talking, it's never one interrupting the other.
Right.
Yeah. We found, we came to that formula after failing, you know, like, what was it? PAX East 2013. Like, this was our first time. This is back when I didn't understand the value of beta testing so much. So we put together, you know, a section of Rev 60, and the feedback we got over and over and over again was it's too slow.
It's too watchy.
So then we took the entire game and we rewrote the entire script, and I said, look, every 10, 15 seconds you must interact with the screen or make a choice or do an action event or something. You cannot just sit here and watch this stuff because you will go crazy. And I think there's a few times in the entire game where it's more than 30 seconds and that's it. And you can see this in the reviews of people playing it, how it doesn't feel like this awful, you know, QTE game. It's very interactive. You're afraid to take your fingers away from the screen.
Well, that's your power, though. Yeah. It's like that famous story of Alan Moore writing The Watchmen, where he stuck to the – he had Dave Gibbons stick to the nine-panel grid, because then when he broke it, it actually – it was like music. It changed the rhythm of the story. It became a tool.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about Igloo. Igloo is an internet you'll actually like. Igloo provides a place to unite your office, to share files, to keep everyone on track with updates, and even share details on Grilled Cheese Friday. Yes, I went there. Grilled Cheese Friday. Plus, Igloo works on your laptop, tablet, or phone, so even on the go, you'll stay connected to all your office and project updates. Coming this summer, Igloo is excited to introduce integrated task management. Now you can juggle multiple projects with task lists and even manage the tasks that aren't part of specific projects, like updating a graphic in a big client presentation or delegating to-dos after a meeting. And all your tasks, no matter the type, are accessible in one unified view. Try Igloo for free at igloosoftware.com/debug. That's igloosoftware.com/debug. And I want to thank Igloo for supporting the show and you for supporting them.
Yeah.
So how long have you guys been working on this? I mean, let's get into the sort of
forever and ever.
Forever. So I met Amanda where all fantastic professional relationships start, Craigslist.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. I know, right?
I've had some professional relationships from Craigslist.
And,
they didn't work out so well.
Ours worked out pretty well.
Good.
So,
wait, literally, you posted. You posted like an animator.
Yeah. Well,
a 3D.
I was
expert.
Looking. I was looking to learn animation, and you know, Amanda was fresh out of animation school, and you know, I wanted to learn Maya, so I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna post something to Craigslist and learn how to do it. And we started working together, and I'm like, screw it, I'm gonna go get some venture capital and launch a company with Amanda. So that's literally how it happened. So.
You are more actualized than I could ever be. There's no way
what do you mean?
Any of that.
Really?
Going on Craigslist. Stuff happen. And recruiting people and going out to get money? No. I mean, I'd rather just sit at home and play a game.
Yeah. Well, I know that now. Yeah. I know now what a mistake that was. So,
so you guys formed the company together. And this was when?
About 2011. Yeah.
Oh, no. It was 2010.
It was 2010 when we first started working together.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the game didn't start for real until, you know, 2011 when we moved into our current house, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. I like to think that the first year was just me figuring out what I was doing because
along with it.
Right. Amanda going along with it. Because I had no background in 3D at that point. And I, like many people, just like to pick up a program and figure out how to do it on the fly. So that's kind of what we did. So yeah.
That's really tough with modeling software too.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the listeners at home, 3D modeling is mind-bending.
It's Photoshop squared, you know?
Well, not only that, but then you have to think about polyflow and your vertices and where stuff bends, like especially if it's going to be animated, if it's not, you know, if it's not a static piece.
Yeah. It's, that's hard. There's like a lot of technical details that I don't think people necessarily pick up on.
Yeah.
So
I very stupidly had no information or background in that. I'm just like, we're going to make a game. Let's do it. Because I'm very much a charge into battle kind of girl. So, I had no background or anything. I raised a bunch of money and we made it happen. So there we go.
So 2011.
Yeah.
It's just you two.
Yep.
Do you have the idea for what Rev 60 is going to be, or do you just know that you're going to make a game?
It was It was like a completely different game. The first game was going to be this like top down strategy turn based game, kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics. And then Infinity Blade came out using Unreal, and it was groundbreaking. And I will never forget the conversation. Like, I go over to Bree's house, and she's like, okay, so I've got some news. She's like, we're going to make a 3D game using Unreal. And my eyes like bugged out of my head because I was like, we're going to do what now?
Yeah.
She's like, no, it's going to be totally fine. And I was like, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing here. She's like, no, we got it. This is good. she was saying, like, the first year we kind of, farted around, got to know the programs and everything. In the meantime, I had a internship at a bigger studio, so I was really honing some animation skills there. Got pregnant, got married, had a baby, went on maternity leave. And when I came back, we were finally at a point where, like, Maria could join the team full time.
Okay, so Maria is your first hire?
Our engineer, yeah.
Our first full-time hire. We had a couple of contractors that would help us out with some stuff.
Okay. Which we fired.
Which we let go.
Is there a story there?
Some people are a bad fit, you know?
Like, yeah.
Well, nothing scandalous.
Like, no, I don't mean on a personal level. I mean, because you're a young company learning to do the things that you do. I was wondering if there was some kind of process there. I'll say this.
Something I've learned is I sometimes get people angry at me on Twitter when I say, like, a requirement for GSK is you need to live near enough to Boston to come have a meeting with us. And that has come from the fact that I have ended up firing every single person I've ever met in my entire company's existence that I didn't work with in person, besides their voice actresses, which is different. And I think it's because game engineering is so complicated. Sometimes you have to sit down with someone and solve a problem. And it's that, Guy, you know this, you're a former game developer. It's a stressful position. I've been very angry at Amanda, and like, we've gone and had coffee together and worked it out. And I think you just have to have that in-face thing sometimes. So
yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Just working without the Skype filter,
It's awful. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you can work remotely, but especially in game development, because you touch so many things. Mm-hmm. Like, there's all of the technical issues, but being able to walk over to the desk of an artist to either debug something or figure out what their intent was can be invaluable.
Yeah.
Just being able to turn around to say to somebody, I need help with X, and here's what's happening. Can you look at my computer?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and there's so many specialities, and you never know which one you're going to need to go and talk to in order to accomplish what you need to get done.
Yeah, it's like the things that, if for some reason I left GSK and went and got a job at outside of my company, it's just jobs that I ended up doing because someone needed to do them. Like, we fired our modeler because it just wasn't working out. And so I had to learn to take care of that and take care of level design and take care of texturing, take care of UVing. I'm really good at it at this point, but it's kind of, when you lead a company, it's your job to fill in, make sure the mission gets done no matter what. So the skills that I've learned have necessarily been what we needed to get done. Whereas Amanda just animated an entire game all by herself. So
I kind of didn't have the ability to go and do other things because it was just like, okay, I just got to keep going. Okay, I just got to keep going.
Nose to the grindstone kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I know.
So 2011 or 2012, I guess.
2012 is when we got started.
You hired Maria, and this is where things start really building, right?
Yeah.
She put together the first engine that we could start plugging stuff into, and we started putting together a playable scene and got all really excited about it.
She retopologized all her models, which had probably 200,000 verts originally, which obviously is not going to win a meal. She figured out a melting problem. I don't know if you know this guy, but in Unreal, if you go over 75 bones in a skeletal mesh, then it requires a second draw call. So we would bring our characters into Unreal originally. You would see Holiday, and she would look like the scene at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where your face would melt down your body. That's what Holiday looked like, because the bones would just melt on her face. It was horrible and to look at. So yeah, she solved that problem for us and a bunch of others. So yeah.
She became a really talented technical artist. Anytime we had an issue, we lovingly refer to her as the bat phone.
Yeah.
Nice.
So she set all that up for us, and we really just kind of got the ball rolling.
And did it actually roll, or was there like a bunch of false starts? Because I know how this works, and something screwed up somewhere.
Sure. Oh yeah, I screwed up.
No.
Yeah.
I don't mean you particularly, but something goes wrong, right?
Yeah. Game dev is an iterative process. Right. I mean, you know this probably better than I do, because I think you've worked longer in the field than I have, but it's very iterative, and you try something and you play it and you see if it works or not. Let me give you an example. Something we're going to completely get rid of in the sequel is rendered cutscenes. I loved, for Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy X, this rendered beautiful opening set to music. And I unwisely had us, you know, do that. The difference is on mobile, if you hand a controller to someone and ask them to watch 2 minutes of something before they even start, it's a serious mistake. So we kind of altered that. And Renee, you've played the beta, so you know, you turn it on, there's like 5 seconds of a cutscene, and then you play this, we call it tutorial level, but you're really like getting some codes and breaking out of a building, which is very action-based.
Yep.
And then you have 45 seconds of our original cutscene, and then you do another action, and then you have 45 seconds of it. So it was a mistake to like make it open up with making you watch something for 2 minutes, because you know gamers are not going to watch something for 2 minutes. Okay. So that was a mistake I made and I learned from.
So the entire development took what, 2.5 years?
About that. Yeah.
And how big is the team now?
5 people. Only 5 people shipped this game.
That sounds big if you're doing for an indie studio, like indie app studio, but 5 people to make a game is remarkably small.
Yeah. Especially if you played this. This is a really ambitious game. So,
so
we brilliantly an
accomplishment.
Go ahead.
Did the other people have much experience in the game industry?
Carolyn does. Carolyn came from Harmonix.
Yeah. Of course.
No idea.
So that's one.
Doing.
What did you get them all off Craigslist or what?
No. It was. You know, some people have accused me of like reverse sexism for mostly hiring women at Giant Space Cat. Yes. And the truth is, like, I hired Amanda because I met Amanda and I'm like, here is a brilliant woman at animation. And you can see her work in the game and it's unbelievably good. And Amanda happened to know Maria from school. And I happened to know Carolyn from, you know, other just industry events I'd gone to. So it was really just looking around me at who I personally clicked with, then bringing them onto the team. So
you're sexist.
Yeah, yes. That's it. I'm terribly sexist. No, it's,
well, and it's one of those things.
Like exclusive.
Yeah. Breaking the big stories. If it was 5 dudes that put out a game, nobody would even think about it.
Right.
So, whatever.
That's the thing. It's unremarkable because that's been the norm.
Right.
Yeah, I actually didn't want to get into it on this conversation.
Oh, I don't.
No. I will totally go with it as much as you want. But I want to make a point to the audience that this game is good and your work is great. And it's got, it's not like, let's give a, like a little ribbon to the girl studio. It's right. Like, this is a conversation actually one worth have because getting this game done is difficult, especially with five people who didn't have a lot of experience in the industry and are a remote team effectively, mm-hmm. or at least for a lot of the development. I think that's a super interesting story. That said, you've also got another super interesting story. Have you had a hard time balancing that in terms of coverage or in terms of how you position the game or the studio?
I personally have found, well, it's there is a level of networking in game dev that I personally find difficult to penetrate, like us being a female, mostly female studio. It's definitely intimidating because most of the gatekeepers in our industry are guys, and I try to do the best I can with that, but it is intimidating because you see, well, let me give you an example. Like, a lot of networking that happens in game dev happens in bars where a bunch of guys in their 20s are getting trashed at, 6, 7, 8 o'clock on a weekday. I'm married and I'm sorry, there's a certain point where going and getting trashed with the guys is just not something I'm into. Amanda has a daughter. So I personally find that networking aspect of it to be something I've had to devote twice as much time to. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's something I really have to work at. So
no, I think that's a problem with the game industry.
Yeah.
I think maybe somebody would think it's a problem with you that you don't. Uh-huh. Well, why don't you come and hang out? Yeah, exactly. But ultimately, I think there's some cultural issues with the game industry that it burns people out, and the people who get burnt out with it. The people who burn out are the people who experience, and they end up leaving. And so their experience doesn't end up feeding back into the system.
Right.
And so, it's hard to be married and have kids.
It doesn't mature.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very young industry. I mean, a bunch of 20-year-olds. Yeah. I'm not saying people aren't brilliant, but
a little bit
of experience, right?
They're in different places in their life,
right?
Where they can spend, 70 hours, 80 hours in the office and not have it be, certainly like it's a cumulative effect and it is impactful, but like in a more immediate sense, it's not a big deal. They can be there. They can, really bond with their buddies in the office because that's who they're spending the most time with. And then as you get older, and you want different things and you want a partner and maybe you want kids, like that becomes less tenable.
Yeah.
So,
and there's weird stuff that like, I had a friend, he has to go home to take care of his kids.
Sure.
And teammates would kind of be thinking that he wasn't like a team player.
Yeah. Right. That word heroism thing.
Yeah. Which is like, that is the most screwed up thing. Yeah. You're working on a games can be fun, but I mean, ultimately, that's a little human at home, right? Like, get a little bit of sense of scale of like what's important,
Yeah.
So don't.
The cops will come and get me. I don't take care of this.
Right. Yeah. The cops do not arrest you for like not shipping your game in time.
If your cat doesn't eat on time, he'll be okay. It's not to say he was leaving an infant alone.
I do feel, like I have to say this. Like, Renee, you and Guy have been so nice to our studio. I mean, you're having us here and like Epic has been wonderful to us. There have been guys at Apple that have worked with us. And I just really want to be clear here that the overwhelming majority of people in this industry genuinely care about this and want to do the right thing and are actively listening to try to kind of improve it. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to make it sound like, oh, game dev is awful. I'm just saying that these are some things that we've faced. I mean, I've had high-level meetings with people and have noticed that like one of the people there staring at Amanda's ass, like in a really creepy way, you know, like that happens, you know?
I just don't even see it anymore.
Well, you're, yeah, exactly. Well,
it's your ass, so it's behind right, you. Yeah. It's kind of hard to, yeah, you wouldn't have noticed.
I mean, which has changed the tenor of the meeting. Like, this is a professional meeting that we're having, and it gets uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. But overwhelmingly, like, it's been, I've been shocked by how many allies I've found and how much belief there is that something like Giant Space Cat does need to exist. So
that's been really heartening.
Yeah,
I find. I mean, especially as the game has come out, like how many people have been like, yes, good job, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, putting us aside, I honestly do think that the world is basically full of good people and systemically stuff is screwed up. That doesn't mean that the most individuals don't want to do the right thing. They may not be aware of what the right thing is, or they may feel defensive in some ways, but I don't think there's a lot of bad, like actually bad people are rare, I think.
But they're vocal, which gives them a lot of,
I should note that I'm sure you guys get a lot of hate mail, so...
I get a lot of hate mail, Amanda.
Luckily, and please don't think of this as an invitation, people, but
please really do not.
Really,
I will be mad.
I think it's definitely Bree bears a lot of the brunt of that. You know, she is more visible, and because of that, becomes like this lightning rod for Ick. And she
I'm stealing that lightning rod for Ick. Is like,
I was thinking we should have show titles again, but
sorry, I cut you off.
But she does it gracefully and well.
I don't always do it gracefully.
Not always. I mean, not always. Always publicly, yes. Mm-hmm. Privately with us, you know, like you're allowed to come unglued.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, she handles it well, and she's a big believer in being a bridge builder, and you know, she's affecting change, and it's been really nice to see, you know, people rally around her when shit goes down, you know. So
so shifting gears a little bit, if you want, we can keep talking about this. But the past few months, the last few months of shipping a game stink.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How have you guys handled it?
Lots of alcohol. Dreaming about Mai Tais. What?
Yeah, right. I mean, as crummy as the last situation topic was, this one is like, oh yeah, this is actually just as bad. Mm. So, how long was the crunch?
Do you think we had crunch, Amanda? Really?
No, I think we actually did okay. I mean, we had points now and again where there would be some late nights, but for the most part, like it was steady. Like it wasn't fits and starts. It was just a steady, okay, we checking off lists and just last minute things that would lead to a squabble here and there, but nothing that we were ever unable to work out. And everybody was really, really involved and like really just wanted to put the best thing out there. So I think everybody kind of understood where everyone else was coming from.
Sure.
It wasn't so bad. I don't know. Maybe Bree has a different recollection, but
well, I think it's different for me because as the head of the studio, I don't ever get time off. Like for instance, we had a release party last night and some very important people are emailing me and I had to leave the party and go take care of that second. So what I've really struggled with, and Renee, I would imagine it's the same for you, but the buck stops with me. So, there's no downtime for me.
When something's not done, we're the ones who don't get to sleep.
Yeah, it's really true. It's the burden of leadership. Have you ever read Starship Troopers, Renee?
Yep.
It's very, they talk a lot about the burden of command there and how it's not, it's not glory. It's a moral responsibility for your people. And I didn't really understand that until I had this job. And what I really struggle with personally is how to balance, like, obviously my first mission in life is to be a good wife to my husband. Like, my family is the most important thing. And I'm still kind of trying to find out where that edge is. Because, I mean, Amanda, you're more able to leave at 5 than mm-hmm. I am, you know? So it's... I would say crunch wasn't bad for me because it's been kind of the same as it's always been for me, which is working 80 hours a week, you know? So I don't know. It's for us going forward, it's got to be finding a way to mitigate that a bit. It's hard for me. Like, Guy, I would imagine you understand this, that I love sitting down and creating a level. I get a thrill out of coming with a really efficient way to UV some static meshes with a few 1K maps and to implement that and make a gorgeous set. I love that. It's a professional thrill. It makes me feel awesome. But as our studio has grown and my profile in the industry has grown, It's hard for me to know that going forward, the studio needs me to be out there more working on this stuff and doing development less. So right. Does that make sense to you? Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, totally. I mean, not to make a direct comparison, but I mean, going back in time, like people like Peter Molyneux, mm-hmm. you know, used to nerd it out and hack it all up, right? And then they ended up having to run the business and being the front end of stuff. Yeah. And it is a transition. It's a totally different skill set. So
right.
I kind of don't envy you that, but I think you're good at it. I mean, you're a political operative at one point. So I think you've got the skill set in order to achieve your goals.
It's something I didn't think I was good at, and having this job, I found out I'm good at it. So I don't know. It's very strange for me.
It is weird. Yeah. So did you have to drag this thing over the finish line, or were you like running on all cylinders?
I think it was the thing we were working on, like as we were really finishing up, was just polish, 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 polish. So I wouldn't say we dragged it over the finish line. I would say we are perfectionists by our nature. At GSK. So there was, I talked to you about this a bit on Twitter, actually, where it was like, for the last month of shipping this game, I found we'd really led the team with a more collaborative style. Like my company, Giant Space Cat, I would describe as a hyper collaborative company. Like we would talk about ideas, majority would rule, generally speaking. But in the last month of it, I found that my company didn't need a consensus builder as much as they needed a decider and someone to say, yes, no, cut that feature. I don't care. Discussion is cut off. We're done talking about this. Ship right. it. I need Ship this by Monday. Ship or die. And that was immensely uncomfortable for me personally because I had to be a jerk to my team. But that's what they needed at that point was a leader to say, discussion is over. We're shipping now. I hear your opinion, but we're not doing that. So it was very uncomfortable for me, actually.
I have to say, though, as like on this side of it, those last few weeks, it was almost, I mean, like a comfort to be like, okay, this isn't something like I need to hem and haul over. This is how it is, and we're done.
Yeah.
You know?
So it was good. It worked out well for you.
Or at least I think
appreciated
so.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
but you wouldn't stay at a company like that forever, Amanda. No.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I think we all understood like that was, we're in the home stretch. Like there wasn't room for debate. And, you know, when you needed backup on certain things, I'm like, nope, done.
Yep.
I'd pipe up and be like, no.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that because I told Bree to be a jerk and that the team would be okay with it after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad that that worked out because that could have gone south really quickly.
Yeah.
Hey, Amanda, you're still planning on going into battle with me for the next one, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. There no, we go. I've got the armor all polished up.
All right. Great. Great. Great.
Okay. And I'm ready. My charger's ready.
Perfect. But I mean, tell you, like, yeah. When you got to get out the door, you got to change attitude, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I mean, there came a point with Maria, with our engineer, who was like, I just want to test it one more time. I'm like, nope, done.
Yeah.
We had to like wrestle it out of her hands and just be like, just let it go. Just let it go.
And that's not to say we hadn't tested, but it was like, look, you made one tweak to this build. I will not take us off task for 3 days to do a comprehensive battery of tests. Tonight, Frank and I will play through this on the four devices that kind of encompass all categories, you know, Retina iPad Mini, iPad non-Retina, iPhone 4S, and, you know, iPhone 5S. That kind of captures everything in the gamut, you know. It would be like, I will do this tonight, but we will not slow down development another 3 days for fear. You know, there has to be a point where this needs to go out the door. And I have to say, like, we've not gotten any serious reports of crashing. I mean, it's a stable build. So
that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people, at least listeners to this show, understand that software ships with bugs.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of life. And you go and fix them afterwards. And some of them you may even know about, like if it's some weird minor little case. And games are so weird in that there's so much more state in a game than there is in a typical application that you can get, you know, these weird situations. I mean, not necessarily in your game, but, you know, characters can have inventory slots. They can have various stats. They can have, like, magic
so many
trees.
They can
have abilities. Yeah, exactly. There's so many weird things. They could have put the crate, like some weird crate in one city in a weird place, and now they can't ever get home. Like,
run again.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever weird thing it is, it's like, it can happen because there's a lot of state in games.
Mm-hmm. Well, like at one point, we were going to have a feature with, as Holiday was exploring N313, which, by the way, is a Metal Gear reference, if any of you.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah. As Holiday is exploring N313, our original design document had her picking up, you know, gun parts for her Needler to, you know, affect the stats and affect how it went. And we certainly could have done that. We may add it for the sequel, but at a certain point, it's like, no, this is mission creep. This is wanderlust, and you have to kill it. And especially when you're a team of just five people, I think your biggest, man, Apple's creed about staying focused and saying no to stuff, that is a good motto for an indie development team. Like anything that's not dead focused on this mission, we ruthlessly killed.
Yeah, just say no.
Yeah.
Just say no, exactly. Yeah. Except to the sequel, apparently, you're saying yes to.
Yeah.
So
we'll look at it for the sequel. Absolutely. So.
So what is that? You know, what was the process behind that? It seemed to me that you decided to do the sequel before you'd ship this one. Mm-hmm. How much downtime are you going to have?
I could give everybody a month off. I might take two. So, you know.
So Amanda, it's like Mai Tai is all the way in from now on?
Uh-huh.
Good.
For a while, yeah.
We should hang out.
I'm drinking with the toddler. I mean, it's responsible parenting, right?
That actually sounds fun. I mean, they do all the goofy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, I want to go down to Disney for a few weeks with my husband. Just not answer email. I'm probably going to pass Amanda the keys to my email. Sorry, you're going to get some nasty stuff in there. And just unplug. And try to get that motivation for the sequel. But I mean, you know, Mass Effect 2 came back and solved so many of the problems of Mass Effect 1. It was a massively better game. I would probably put Mass Effect 2 as the greatest game ever made. And I think one of the things is we see the flaws in this game so clearly. But I know if we go another time out of the gate that we will address the flaws in this, you know, game that's reviewing excellently and mm-hmm. come back and really do a fantastic game. The plot we have planned for the sequel is much more coherent from the word go. I'm going to work my butt off and try to cast Felicia Day as one of our main characters. I'm working so hard on that politically. I'm hoping we can get that to happen. And it's just going to be a more coherent story overall. And I know what we need to change from the word go. Let me give you an example. One of the problems that you have is Holiday has to recharge her needler as she fires, and you fire, and then it's 2 seconds waiting for her to recharge. Mm-hmm. A very minor change that we're going to make for the sequel is we're going to make it like Secret of Mana, where you can attack at any time, and you could sit there and hammer on the button to fire, but it won't attack with full force if you do that. If you wait for it to charge back to 100%, it will have the full effect of the shot. Mm-hmm. So I think like small changes like that will make combat feel more responsive.
Right.
So, you know, it's 1,000 changes like that that we've learned from, you know, playtesting this thing.
Well, and a lot of stuff as we were developing, like, wouldn't it be nice if they all kind of went into a pile and we're going to
address them.
Yeah.
That said, keeping the Apple motto of staying true to it, not adding needless complexity, because we could certainly throw features on there all day long. But the strength of our game is that you don't have to be a hardcore gamer to enjoy the story. And it's really figuring out how to do that. So,
Are there any changes in the process that you want to make?
Well, we're going to be using Unreal 4. For the sequel. So that's the biggest one. There's a strong chance that we'll be able to support it for Android from the word go, which, you know, I'm excited about. The number one question I get is, are you going to bring it to Android? So, that's something I'm looking forward to. But it's also frustrating for us that, you know, Unreal has basically deprecated everything we wrote for Unreal Script in the first one. I'm told that Blueprints underneath the hood does use Unreal Script. So we're going to see if we can find a way to get that to still run in Unreal Engine 4. But, you know, basically we're going to switch to an all new engine. I think... Like, Renee, do you know, has Apple said what devices iOS 8 is going to end up supporting yet? Have you seen
that? Yeah, it's from the 4S up.
Right. Okay. So yeah, same
four,
devices, basically?
It's not
the 4 gets dropped.
Yeah.
Great. So, you know, we're still going to be constrained to 512 memory, which is the biggest problem we face the whole time. So I don't think our poly count is going to increase drastically, or, you know, the number of characters on screen at one time. A lot of people don't know this, but our characters being in skin tight suits was a conceit to poly count, because we had to choose, are we going to have bad hair where it's all clipped to their head and doesn't move and it's just like this polygonal helmet, or are we going to have like long, beautiful animated hair? And to do that, we were going to, you know, we sacrificed costume detail, because you look at a character's face most of the time. I was hoping Apple would get rid of, you know, the iPad non-retina and the iPhone 4S, but since they're not, the costumes are kind of going to be the same again.
Take a quick break so I can tell you about Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help individuals and organizations learn. You can instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/debug. So here's a cool thing. Lynda.com is almost like a university on the internet, but one that actually works for individuals. It's not a system. It's not a factory. They don't, you know, suck you in on one end and spit you back out on the other side. It just gives you the tools you need to learn the skills that you need to learn. They have fresh content. New courses are added daily. The courses are in the thousands, so there's a really high likelihood that if you're involved in technology in any way and want to learn more about it, they will have you covered. It's also really easy to learn, to use. There's high quality, easy to follow video tutorials. They're produced really, really well. They're broken down into bite-sized bits, so you can do just as much as you have time to do at any specific moment. And they've got great tools like searchable transcripts and playlists. And they have certificates of course completion. So if you need, you know, that proof, you get that proof at the end. They got courses from beginners to advanced.
advanced. It's all levels, all ages. You can learn on the go. They've got great mobile apps, great iOS apps. You can start on a website, on a computer, you know, go to the web, or you can just, you know, use it on your phone or your tablet. You can go back and forth. And it's got unlimited access. You have one low monthly price, $25. It gives you access to over 100,000 video tutorials. There's also premium plans that let you download the courses to your iPhones, iPads, Android phones, or tablets and watch them offline. You can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. They're always adding new courses. They often add courses very quickly after software comes out. So, for example, when Yosemite comes out this October, they will probably have that up Tootsuite really fast after that. And it's really easy to learn. For example, if, like myself, you are trying to get off GarageBand and onto Logic Pro 10, just to stop Dave Wiskus and Jason Snell from making fun of you, then, you know, Lynda is a great place to go because you can learn at your own pace. It takes all the stress out of it. You're no longer intimidated by an unfamiliar interface or by an elaborate tool set or by an engine that you think is way too powerful under the hood for someone with as limited knowledge as you have. They let you get your feet wet slowly, let you dip a toe in, and then let you build from there. So you're always comfortable. They let you boil your educational frog. So we've managed to work out a special deal with them, and it's exclusive to Debug listeners. All you have to do is go to lynda.com/debug, and you can access all courses for free for 7 days. That's, once again, you can try lynda.com for free for 7 days. All the courses, all you can watch. And that's at lynda.com/debug. LYNDA.com/debug. Thanks, Lynda.
Yeah, it's tough. It's always hard to figure out, you know, what trade-offs you have to do.
Yeah.
Just for listeners, all of the 3D model stuff is... The way stuff moves is... determined by bones. I mean, I'm sure Amanda can explain this. More bones equals more compute power, basically.
Yeah.
So model complexity goes up. How many bones do you have in those models?
75?
No, it's 83 for Holiday, I think, is the final count. Yeah. Our top count is 83, castles. Which is insane because, yeah, you know, like Cyrus from Infinity Blade has like 20. Yeah. So
and the majority of that is in her head.
Yeah.
Between the face and her hair. And if we're going to have secondary motion anywhere, it's going to be in the hair.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be.
And that's something we placed very highly. I love Chair professionally, the developers of Infinity Blade. I'm a huge fan of their work. I look at where Chair is, and that's the studio I want to be in 5 years, like that size. Mm-hmm. But they also make a choice in Shadow Complex, Infinity Blade, to just throw a helmet over their face as soon as possible. And, you know, it's a stylistic choice they make. It would never work for a game like ours, which is all about emotion and character conflict. That's all in the faces.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is like, so you made an intentional choice to put the bones in the face and hair for the expressiveness.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise it ends up looking like Power Rangers, where it's like a bunch of gesticulation trying to get something across.
That would be kind of awesome, though.
It would be.
Yeah, yeah.
Put everybody with a baseball cap, something like that.
Yeah. You know, I think at one point we had talked about making part of the station, like when we were talking about Taft to Move and we weren't sure if the full rig would work in that scenario. We're like, well, maybe we can make it so like the air's been sucked out of these particular places and like she can have a helmet, but yet again Maria came through and figured it out.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a good trade-off and it makes sense given your priorities.
It does, but you know, we've taken a lot of heat for our character designs because our characters do wear form-fitting outfits. And, you know, believe me, I understand that. I understand that you can see that a certain way in a screenshot, but you know, if you watch the way Amanda's animated it, it's all the action is concentrated on the characters' faces and the emotions. We don't have like, hey, let's frame Holiday's butt in the shot and like kind of male gaze her. So, you know, I think it's not something you can readily communicate to the problem, to the public though, like the engineering side of it, because people just don't know that stuff.
Right.
That's not their point of reference.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is the inspiration for the character design?
It's my art. My parents sent me to a psychologist at one point because I would not stop drawing comic book characters. Like, this is, I've been doing this all my life. I think the characters are very much a mix of my style and Amanda's. I think mine kind of have a more comic booky edge to it, and Amanda's are a little bit more, how would you describe it, Amanda?
Well, I had a big comic book influence too. I mean,
any favorite artists?
Joe Majewera was one of my favorites.
Nice.
Age of Apocalypse, I poured over that. Like, Blink was one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, mine too.
That and the redesign of Rogue with the puffy sleeves and the haircut. And the Age of Phalanx, I would say that was my biggest influence, and then like a little mix of anime, but it tends to be a little more bubblegum pop, I think.
My two biggest influences are Sailor Moon. To this day, if you come to my house, you can see Sailor Moon books. It cost like $300-$400 to import from Japan, that literally the pages of the book are falling apart from me opening it up and drawing the figures in it repeatedly over and over again. And then there's the other side of that, which is J. Scott Campbell, who is very known for his over-sexualized women.
Sure.
It really tears me because I look at his art and it's so, he's hit upon some primal chord in the universe for like showing the most beautiful, awesome women ever. But then he like will apply this like Photoshop filter. So like Abby's boobs are jiggling back and forth, or we'll do this upskirt shot. And it's really disturbing because you have somebody that does women so beautifully.
The faces and hair are gorgeous.
Unbelievably good. Yeah. But then he does it in this way that's just like ick, you know? So
is he drawing to his perceived audience of teenage boys?
Sure.
Or, yeah.
I mean, have you seen some work of his that isn't like, you know what I mean? Like just.
Yeah, he did some comic book a few years ago where it was aimed more at children. I don't know if this was it Wild Side or something like that. And it was great because he had powerful, strong female characters with like, you know, this girl that could manifest these giant holographic claws for her hands. And she was just awesome. She was a strong character and didn't have all this baggage, like this sexually exploitive baggage along with it. And I was a really big fan of that. So I think he can do it. I just think it's, I don't know. Amanda, how would you describe it?
Why he does it?
Well, his art.
Like, oh, well.
Porny?
I was like, how can I tiptoe around that word? But that, I mean, when I look through it, I'm like, it's a little porny.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If it was 1950s pinups, okay.
There's a bit of those. I mean, Frank Cho, Adam Hughes, they're all fantastic, but they all skew that direction.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, even Joe does too. Like, I will frequently see his stuff and I'm like, oh.
It's kind of like, I loved Arthur Adams stuff and Paul Smith, because they kind of held that line much better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you can look at the orthographic drawings for Rev 60 and you can see where, like, I literally sat down with J. Scott Campbell's work and, you know, do you guys know what orthographic sketches are? Like, it's a mathematical representation of what your 3D model should look like. Yeah, I sat down with J. Scott Campbell's stuff and I figured out, like, mathematically, I would go through his drawings and say, okay, the hip to waist ratio is here. You know, the breast to like rib cage ratio is here. Here's how he draws his faces. Here's how it would look with 3/4 view, half of this. And I spent a long time kind of figuring out what his ratios are for literally drawing the most beautiful women that exist. And then like Amanda and I sat down and desexified it as much as we could. I mean, I mean, do you want to talk about that, Amanda? Like,
what, our trips to Panera and having people stare over our shoulders?
Right.
Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? It's kind of porny. So
it's a little porny. Why is she naked?
Right.
I mean, like we hired a modeler to make, do you want me to tell this story?
Yeah. Go for it.
All right. So
let's get all our dirty laundry out.
Let's just air everything. So we hired a modeler to make, you know, the base model for us, the original Holiday. And the first iteration that we got back, the boobs were huge.
Oh, God.
Like, really huge. And we're like, can you just take them down a little? And also, could you make her less cold? So, you know, we swapped it back and forth with him a couple of times, and we kept saying, like, no smaller. And he's like, well, no, aesthetically they should look like blah blah. And I wanted to scream at him, like, two owners of this particular body part are telling you that this is wrong.
right
Maybe you should listen to us.
He couldn't get it.
He couldn't wrap his brain around it. Like, no,
were you being explicit? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, straight up, like, no, the boobs need to be smaller. Like, think A cup, B cup.
that's not going to mean anything to
dude,
you know? But,
yeah, yeah. Right. Saying that, I'm like, that means nothing to you.
We would draw drawings. It would be like, look, okay, here's where the line is, and here's this line way further back, and this is where it should be.
Yeah, can you bring
it here? I shouldn't laugh, but I kind of love the idea of just the process of, like, I'm just imagining everything else shrinking, but the boobs staying the same size, just because he's like, just got this, he's got a bee in his bonnet.
He's got this mental block.
It's like a scene from a movie.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what movie that is with the, with the button pressing, making them bigger. Finally, we just like, all right, fine. We're just going
to
do it ourselves.
Amanda and I went to Panera Bread one day with my 2010 MacBook and just booted up and said, screw it. Let's make this happen. So we cut our, we debound everything and we just did soft select and just shrink it down. And we're like, boom, there you go.
Soft select scale.
I do have to say, though, like, you know, as long as we're talking about body type, like, you guys have met me in person. I'm very, very tall and very skinny. And one of my goals for Rev 62 is to kind of widen our representation of body types a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's what looked right to me. But, you know, 2010 Brianna did not understand the political spotlight that she was going to be walking into. So, you know, like, it's, I've learned some things over the last few years. So, like, representing girls that are shorter and maybe a little bit less skinny, you know, like, that's a body type I want to be in the sequel. So, you know, there's plenty of room for all kinds of people to grow. I know I certainly have.
So I hear you're going to have a male character, but that's going to double. It's going to double all your engineering efforts.
Yeah, we could have to cut it. We could have to cut the male
character. I don't know if I'm mentally strong enough to handle both.
Like, you can't wrap your head around it?
I just can't. I don't. It's so different.
Yeah. For our listeners, we're making fun of Ubisoft and Assassin's Creed. Mm. Who, I mean, they've had women assassins before. Mm-hmm. And now they don't. And they have the lamest excuse.
Oh, it's so much BS.
It's changed. The excuse has changed. Yeah, now they're saying the latest thing I thought that I saw, there is a female assassin in the story, but she's non-playable. It's story driven now. It's not like a technical thing, apparently.
Yeah.
That's still BS.
It is. It's totally. If you look at Aveline from Assassin's Creed Liberation, I know for a fact, because I've played those games, that she uses the same animation cycles that the male assassins do, and like it's largely the same. So
yeah, that was a big excuse, right? The animations would have to be all redone, like all the motion capture would have to be redone.
Not really.
Yeah, no.
Like, if it's something you've set up from the beginning, it's not that hard. Yeah. Like it is something that you can set up to be transferable, but that has to be the intent.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think that whatever, like, I think that statement was somebody just trying to say something.
Yeah.
To like
thinking that they're making it better.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking that they're trying to make it better, that they don't have a woman character. So they just say stuff and it's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they didn't really help their cause very much.
No.
So
dug themselves a big hole.
Yeah, they did. I have to say, I have female friends of mine that are working Ubisoft, and I just want to say, like, there are people on that team that I know that are trying to make it better, you know? So I just want to put that out there.
Well, I mean, like I was saying before, most people are good people. So, I mean, and this goes in this case too.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, it's fun to figure out how you add a male character to a mostly female cast. Do you know what I mean? And we've been thinking a lot about it. And, you know, so the character you'll have in the sequel, his name is Chase. He's Chinese American.
Can he get kidnapped and you can save him?
I don't think we'll do that.
We keep him in various castles. Yeah. But yeah. We'll tell you which one.
He's just going to be showering castles, for no reason. That'd be awesome. At the beginning of the game, just shirtless, and we'll get that in there.
He just comes out of the water
for no reason.
He's just listening. Yeah.
We're going to do it. No, it's fun. I mean, the person, I don't know who we'll get to cast for it, but my dream is getting Chris Hardwick to play our male character and to bring him in to be this kind of self-deprecating, jokey kind of guy, you know? Like, I don't know. I think it's the dynamic of adding that is going to be a lot of fun.
So do you have a plot? You've got a plot for the next game.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a timeline?
18 months if we can do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'll talk to you 24 months from now.
Yeah. When pulling my hair out, I'm crazy. So, no, I mean, it's...
Excited? Or like, are you... You guys both seem excited rather than like... I mean, you had your ship party last night. So.
Yeah. Well, we're still riding the high from yesterday, too.
Yeah.
But just like optimistic and hopeful and like, oh my God, this is exciting and it's being well received. So let's do another one.
Yeah.
I like this high. This is good.
I mean, I think it's the creative impulse. If you're a creative person, you want to keep on creating. And I just I don't know. I'm so excited about the chance to go through and do a sequel to this. That said, there are other games that like I would love to work on. I at some point am going to find a contact at Sega and I'm going to jump on a plane and fly out to Sega and get on my hands and knees and beg them to let me do a Space Channel 5 for iPad. Because I think I would make the greatest Space Channel 5 game you have ever seen. Like, can you imagine how great that would be? Like 60 sci-fi on iPad and swiping up, down, left, right, chew. Like, that would be so great. Oh my God, that would be fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun. And, you know, I'd play that.
You would? Yeah. Did you ever play the original?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Love that game. I mean, the huge inspiration for me. So.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that kind of got underappreciated, I think.
Was that
on the Dreamcast?
Yeah, it was on the Dreamcast originally. Yeah.
Dreamcast got way underappreciated. It was a terrific little box.
Have you guys read Console Wars yet?
Not yet. No.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's a great book on like the 90s, Nintendo versus Sega era. It kind of ends with Sega being on a high and conveniently cuts out right before the Dreamcast era because, that's where it kind of all falls apart for them.
Yeah. It was a good console. It just didn't, it sold like 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Great console, though.
Yeah, Rez came out first on the Dreamcast, and Rez is one of my favorite games ever. I think it's a brilliant game.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Anything you want to pitch, but I feel like we've been pitching it the entire time.
Yeah, I feel bad. Thank you guys for coming to my infomercial today.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, no, seriously, congratulations on shipping it. Thanks a lot for coming and chatting about it.
Guy, I hope at some point you'll play it and then just pick apart all of our engine problems and be like, Brianna, this is not optimized here.
I started a little bit. I just I'm going to end up playing it tonight. So I'm looking forward to it. No spoilers.
No spoilers. Everyone dies. Everyone dies at
no,
the end.
Yeah. This time, for once, everybody lives.
Right.
No, it's happy. There are puppies and kittens and rainbows.
There are puppies.
It just rains puppies and kittens.
Tree good, fire bad.
Tree good, fire.
Or fire pretty, sorry. Fire bad, tree pretty.
There you go.
Can I say one last thing about the endings before we go? So this is another design decision that we made. I don't know if you guys have played Mass Effect or whatever, but the whole time you're playing it, many players are sitting in front of an FAQ going the whole time, how do I get the right ending? You know what I mean? Like, how do I max out this stat? How do I min-max this? How do I make this choice at this point? And to me, that was a huge design decision that we steer completely away from. There is no good ending to Revolution 60. There is a bad ending where if you completely screw up and fail all your action events for the game and suck in combat and make dumb decisions.
I'm standing right here, Bree.
Yeah, right. Okay. Like your mission is going to suffer the consequences of having inept soldiers leading the mission. And you can kind of imagine what that's going to be. But another design decision we made was that there should not be a correct ending for it. Mm-hmm. So there are 24 endings to the game, but even the best endings have something really good that happens and something you sacrifice to get that. And this is something we felt really, really strongly about because I want people to go through the game and play it and think about these situations and make the choice because it's the choice they would make in that situation or it's what seems right for the moment, not the quote-unquote right choice that's going to get you the best ending. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a noble goal too.
I have to tell you, like, look at the playtesters that got the bad ending. Oh my God, they were so mad. We had people just screaming the F-bomb at us when they failed to the point where they will never be invited back to our company as playtesters because that's how emotionally invested they were in their game and their ending, which I guess is good. But
yeah, just for the people out there who have played and failed, just take comfort in the fact that I, one of the creators, have failed right off the bat and was like, damn it. Had to go back and play again. But, you know, just you're not alone. It's okay. Yeah.
It's a bird hitting a pipe. Just keep flapping.
Keep flapping.
That's a t-shirt idea. You're a little bit late.
Keep flapping.
It's a $1 million idea,
story
right?
Story of my life, guy.
Instead of keep on trucking, it's keep on flapping.
Keep on flapping. Which is what you guys should do.
We're gonna try. Assuming we're still sane.
Take a break.
Yeah.
Get your feet under you and. Get back to it.
I'm going to get to know this guy I live with called Frank. He seems okay.
Make sure he's still there.
Yeah.
He seems kind of nice. I would give him a try.
Yeah.
Have you fired him yet? I hear he poured champagne over all your game consoles.
Oh my God. So. Did you guys see that last night?
Oh, I saw your tweet.
Yeah.
There's video of me giving the speech, like thanking the team and then Frank opening up champagne and spraying it everywhere. And he was a little drunk and sprayed it all over our TV and destroyed our time capsule. So I have no ability to back stuff up right now.
I love it that he takes out the backup.
Oh my God.
Of course.
He lives on the edge.
Of course.
So there's video out there of my eyes getting giant and like trying to restrain. Right. Like John Syracuse like saw me do on that, like talk about him, like hosing my entire TV and PS4 and Xbox One and Nintendo Wii with it. And his comment is just emoticon downward thumb. And I'm like, that's basically it. So
no, there was an announcement at the end of the party. Just want everyone to know the TV is okay.
But my time capsule is gone.
I know.
My time capsule.
I'm sorry.
That sucks. Oh. So the next time we have you on the show, that the husband is going to be called Bob.
Bob? No.
Like you to meet Frank 2.0.
Trade him up. Yeah.
To be fair, he has sacrificed so much for this game. So sure. I think he could. If he destroyed all my consoles,
I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, we were talking earlier about how the industry can kind of grind you down and people wanted to go home to their kids. The flip side of it is like, people are, the p- people's family lose them for a little bit when, you know, during crunch time and during a lot of the stuff. So that sucks too.
That's really my goal going forward. Yeah, I was talking to Christina Warren at Mashable about this, about how when you start something, you know, especially when you're starting a new industry, it's innately it's a very selfish time. Like you're taking time for you to build an entire career. And just talking about how at a certain point you have to kind of, okay, I've had this time to kind of be selfish and do my thing here. And, you know, this is the point where it's to kind of hire more people to do my job so I can leave at 5. And, you know, like, this is what I'm working for, is to like have a great life with my husband where we're both super actualized, have careers we're passionate about.
You don't want to live to work. You want to work to live.
Afford to replace as many consoles as he ruins.
Right, exactly. But yeah, Frank is a 4-time Hugo Award winner. He, you know, he's a celebrity over in the science fiction field. Yeah, he was talking the other day. It's like, hey, Bree, check this out. Here's where I was arguing with George H.R. Martin about who goes in the Science Fiction Hall of Fame. Like, he's a really well-known guy in his field. And I think it's to his credit that he's been like, okay, you want to become a well-known woman in your field? Here's the space to do it. I'm going to completely support you in that. So
that's great, but he's still got to go. That time capsule thing. That's
done.
It's inexcusable.
$400 time capsule.
Guy, no one will call that a frivolous divorce. Right. They just won't.
hit the bricks, Frank. I don't know. I just decided to be mean to him. It's been a lot of fun, guys. I'm sure I would, which is why I'm kind of just being a jerk. It's been great, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having us on.
I hope everybody goes out and tries Revolution 60. Yeah. I think it's a lot of fun.
Oh, in case anyone doesn't know, Bree, where can we find you and your game and you too, Amanda?
You can find it in the iTunes store. It is available for purchase right now.
And Revolution 60 for the details?
Go to Revolution60.com. There's a link there. Just type in Rev60 in the App Store. You know, it's out there. Read the many, many reviews that are kind of coming out. Or go to iMore and read Renee Ritchie's article.
No, those guys stink. So, not giving them any traffic.
So do that. Or follow me on Twitter. I'm Space Cat Gal. My Twitter account is many things, but it is not boring. So,
what about you, Amanda?
I am at Animator Mommy. My account, however, is boring.
Come on, take a few lessons from me.
Follow them both, and that way you get a nice balanced Twitter feed. Like, it's not too big, not too small. It's perfectly balanced.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, guys.
Oh, thank you for inviting us on.
Thank you so much.
I want to once again thank Hired.com for supporting Debug. To get 5 to 15 job offers in San Francisco, New York, and Los Angeles, and also get a double signing bonus, $4,000 bonus when you accept a job, just go to Hired.com/VectorPodcast.